The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Lynette's Shrimp House, located in Highland Park. It's Metro Detroit's premier destination, serving juicy fried shrimp, fish, and wings, alongside soul food sides and new additions to the menu, like turkey tacos and desserts. Located at 13548 Woodward in Highland Park, just north of the Davison, Lynette's is open for takeaway noon to 8 Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Call now. Get some Lynette's. Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Happy Tuesday. Glad to have you with me today. And I've got a double-decker show for you today. I normally, this time of year, would be up on Mackinac Island for the Detroit Regional Chamber's Policy Conference. That is not happening for me this fall. And hopefully we'll be back there in the spring, but you never know. But either way, I still want to find out what is going on up there. So we're going to check in with my friend Nancy Caffer of the Detroit Free Press, who is on the island, to talk about the mood up there so far. I know attendance is quite a bit different this year, but some of the issues that they're talking about are a bit different as well. And we want to make sure that you get some updates on some of the things that are being discussed up on the island. I've always found it to be a good place to go to get in, you know, interviews and information about things that are being planned for the state. So we'll have that for you today. And of course, you know, it is Tuesday, and in this rare instance, I'm talking to Pat Batchelor of WDET about the Lions because they actually played on Monday Night Football. Not something that happens that often, to be honest with you. So in the second half of the program, we'll have my weekly discussion about all things football with Pat Batchelor. So stick around for the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Thank you very much for being with me on what is a Tuesday. And normally, this time of year, I would be where my guest Nancy Caffer is, and that's at the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island for this year's Mackinac Policy Conference hosted by the Detroit Regional Chamber. Alas, I am not there this year, but as I mentioned, Nancy Caffer, who of course is on the editorial board at the Detroit Free Press, is. She has agreed to be nice enough and fill us in on what the mood is like, what's going on up there, and what might come out of this year's conference. Nancy, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Well, it's nice to see you, Craig.
Well, you know, I'd rather it would be in person, but just wasn't not in the cards for me this year. But, you know, I'm not the only one that's in that situation. There are a whole lot of organizations and folks that are not going up this year. Is it something that you can feel? Does it feel different?
Yeah, there's a lot less people here. If I do you want a live
please,
shot
absolutely.
Here
we have video away. Capability.
As you can see, this is not a ton of people. Like in a normal year, that parlor would be packed. It's in between sessions, and it would often be wall to wall humanity. So there's a different like it's just emptier here this year, which actually feels good considering the situation. Now, I don't want wall to wall humanity.
Well, understood. But that's part of the whole thing this year too. I mean, they were taking a risk by putting this in September of this year. Obviously, it was postponed from the original date of late May when it normally is and didn't have it at all last year. I know the chamber was itching to get this in because they want to have the discussion about how to properly reopen the economy and get things back to normal as much as possible. Is that sort of the discussion point for this whole conference?
Well, you know, Sandy Baruja, the head of the chamber, just made his opening introduction, and he talked about the importance of being able to see each other face to face and to see beyond sort of our on paper positions and to see each other as people. I mean, I agree. I think that's very important. It's a lot easier to reduce people to stereotypes you disagree with when they're just words on a screen or, you know, clips in one of our outlets or something. So I do think the sort of face to face interaction is important. And I applaud the chamber for requiring vaccinations to be here. But I mean, really, if we want to reopen our economy, that is the thing that has to happen, is a full force push across all sectors for vaccines. And the chamber has not backed, for example, Joe Biden's call for widespread vaccination in the workforce. So,
you know, interestingly enough, though, I mean, since COVID is obviously going to be something that is going to dominate a lot of the conversations up here, it's also the thing that is probably keeping this conference from being as full as it could be. You have a number of lawmakers who disagree with a vaccine mandate for the conference, for one, and are making a political point not to be there. So part of what makes this conference important at least, you know, to those who don't attend it, is the fact that people do get together outside of normal spaces and actually have real conversations. Is that possible in this environment?
Well, I mean, like as you said, it's the sliver of Michigan who's COVID cautious enough to be vaccinated, but not so COVID cautious that they opted to stay home. So this is a weird grouping up here. But yeah, sure. If other folks won't be present, then you can't have conversations. I do think there is a nice group of people who are there. There's a nice, I mean, it's not as many as past years. It's still an awful lot of people. And there is some ideological, it's a business event. So you've got the business community, which tends to be more conservative. You see nonprofit and community people running around, which is, maybe a more progressive side of the room normally. So you do have those same things happening. There was a really fantastic session this morning, a very meaningful conversation about poverty and solutions to poverty, and just a really great session, which included a conversation about reparations. And if you would have asked me 10 years ago if I ever thought reparations would be discussed on the stage at Mackinac, then I would have not said that would be a thing. So, I mean, but this is good. This is getting ideas that people in this crowd may not be familiar with in front of them. So, I mean, I think that the things are happening here, albeit on a smaller scale.
Well, you know, you talk about an issue like reparations actually being on the agenda up there.
If it was on the agenda. It came up in the session.
It came up. But, you know, I'm just wondering if this whole thing that we've been dealing with for the last year and a half has opened people's eyes up to some of the inequities that do exist out there and is making us rethink this, because the impacts of COVID have not been spread evenly across the board.
Right. No, they absolutely have not. And I think that's a challenge that you know, we still have to grapple with. We've got different impact on people. You know, a survey out this week commissioned by the chamber, done by the Glidgariff Group, Richard Shuba, talked to people about what kind of the economic impact had been on their household because of COVID. And the people more likely to say that there had been a catastrophic or very damaging economic impact on their household were people of color. White people were more likely to say that there had been no impact or minor impact. So not just the toll of the disease itself, but the economic repercussions.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that poll because, you and I talked yesterday while you were on your way up to the island about the poll that had just been released right as you were probably hopping in your car yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is typically a platform. This island, this conference is a platform for politicians who are seeking higher office or, you know, exploring the waters, shall we say, for higher office. We've got a situation now where Governor Whitmer is going to be giving an address tomorrow. Mayor Duggan's going to be giving an address this afternoon, as a matter of fact. This is an opportunity for them to actually talk a little bit about their vision for the next 4 years, if they want to do it in a place where they're not going to really be challenged. I don't know if either of them are going to be making the rundown media row like they typically do. What are you going to be looking for in let's start with Mayor Duggan, since that was this afternoon.
He typically delivers an address that is very well received up here. He sometimes goes into, again, subjects that the crowd here may not be familiar with. This may be one of the only times we really hear from him in a forum like this. Prior to the election in November, he's not debating his opponent. So there's he has a lot to brag about when it comes to COVID recovery. You don't live in Detroit, but when I get a text on Sunday night to remind me to take my trash out, along with it is a note on the text message saying that if I call this number, they will send someone to my home to vaccinate me for COVID. Like, this is an effective response. Other cities can't necessarily brag about this, but they've really lowered the barriers to accessibility for the vaccine. There's been good outreach. You know, he ran an exemplary operation at TCF and the fairgrounds. So he's got a lot to talk about. He can really I criticized him when it's appropriate to criticize him, and I give the man praise when it's appropriate to praise him. He really has done a fantastic job in COVID management. I don't know what he'll have to say to this crowd in particular, this crowd this year. He's also balancing results of the census that have shown that the population of Detroit continues to decline. he has said repeatedly that he should only be evaluated on population, that population is the most important metric. Detroit's population grows, then he's doing a good job. And if it doesn't, then, you know, I have a feeling he'd probably like us to consider some other metrics now.
Of course.
So yeah, I am eager to hear what he has to say.
Well, I got to say, I have to finish my segue that I was doing about the poll numbers. Some of the poll numbers that we saw yesterday that were intriguing were the polls in terms of support for Gretchen Whitmer at this point in time. And you know, there are some danger signs there. I don't want to suggest that she's, you know, in terrible shape, but you don't like to see your numbers going down. And a lot of that has to do with her response to COVID thus far. Do you think she's going to have an opportunity in her speech tomorrow to sort of set the record straight on how she wants to deal with this going forward? Or is she going to focus on something else?
She absolutely has the opportunity. Whether she chooses to take it is another thing. I mean, the governor came out very aggressively to contain the pandemic last year. She put in place a lot of, as you know, public health measures that were in line with what scientists were urging people to do. As vaccines became available this spring, she really pivoted to vaccines. She has not really talked about COVID much lately. And, you know, is she going to do that here? I don't know. I think I've heard she's talking about electric vehicles later. So, I mean, I don't know what's going to, you know, come of that speech, but certainly it is her opportunity, if she chooses to take it, is there to talk about it. What I think is really interesting about that poll, you know, that her support is weakening. It's independents who are pulling away. And last year, again, Richard Shuba, like Glenn Gareth pollster, who did this poll and won last year for the chamber, had noted to me last year that what was so striking about her approval rating last year was that independents and Democrats were in lockstep on approval of the governor, which he said, you know, doesn't normally happen. You don't normally have such alignment. And that was in a very different phase of her pandemic management. So is she now paying a penalty for having taken a step back from the pandemic? I mean, I think that politics are complicated. There's certainly a lot of different factors. But I think that if I were on her team, would be something I would be very interested in exploring.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, this is an opportunity coming up to Mackinac, giving a speech here, isn't it? It's a real opportunity to shore up your support with the business community, which can put forth a whole lot of money to help your campaign. Now, she hasn't had any trouble raising money thus far, but, you know, it seems that her opponents, the people who would like to run against her, would like to do the same thing. Is there any indication that we're going to get a James Craig appearance up here or anybody the other? Because I believe Rinke is not coming up to the Republican thing, which is next weekend up there, but any indication that any of her opponents are going to be on the island?
I haven't seen any of them, but I've also been trying to keep to the Grand Hotel where vaccinations are required. I haven't been out in town a lot, but I haven't seen any of them or heard any rumblings that they're here.
Yeah, I mean, because there are always fundraisers that happen at this mm-hmm. event.
Also not here, Anthony Adams, who's challenging Mike Duggan, is not here, which is interesting also.
I personally would like to see a debate. I'm not sure that we're going to. We're gonna push for it at Deadline Detroit and see if we can't partner with somebody and try to convince them to do it, but we'll see if we have any luck on
that. But if you were Duggan's team of advisors, you would say, do not do that.
of course. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we as reporters would certainly like to see it.
Of course. And as a Detroit voter, I'd like to see it. But, you know, again, I also recognize the political reality is that he won, you know, he's the top vote getter in the primary by a significant margin. And like I said, he really only has, you know, downsides in a debate situation.
Well, Nancy, we've only got a couple of minutes left, and I do want to ask you about this because, you know, for the average person taking a look at this, they are fed a narrative that this is sort of like, you know, pigs at the trough. In fact, I think Charlie LaDuff of Deadline Detroit put out a video today or a tweet today showing that exact sort of situation. For those who are not there, and yes, this is not a cheap event to go to, although it is free for media who want to cover it. What's the value from your perspective? And I do not want you to defend this conference if you don't feel that you can, but is there value in this still in this day and age?
You know, I don't know. And it's really hard for me to say because I don't have the perspective of an attendee. I don't know. The big announcements tend to come out of the conference. Not so much. I mean, I think years ago that happened more often, a decade or more ago. I don't feel like we have big deals, big announcements. There's still a certain cachet for some politicians in signing things or announcing things like the auto reform.
Sure, that was last year.
They want a certain backdrop. That was a done deal. It just happened to be formalized up here. A lot of the lawmakers are still in Lansing working on the budget right now.
Yep.
So, do things get done? The big deals come out of it? Big announcements? Not so much, but I'm not a regular attendee, so I can't speak to the value that they might find or not find in making connections and making, networking. I think one of the cool things about it that I've heard from friends who work in the nonprofit community is that they have the ability to sort of pigeonhole to the money people in a way that they don't get in regular day-to-day life. And I am all for the folks who lead the nonprofits that do such vital, important work in our community, getting a chance to, kind of make their case to the people who can continue to fund that mission.
Well, speaking of vital work, I there was one announcement that was out on the front porch just a little bit earlier. Wayne County Executive Warren Evans making the announcement of $20 million rental assistance program for Wayne County besides the city of Detroit, but at least recognizing that there's still a need for that. So, that's the kind of stuff that he's going to get an audience for that he probably wouldn't get without all of the collective media in one spot.
Well, and also he's announcing, and I don't want to misspeak on this, he's announcing that they're welcoming Afghan refugees.
Oh,
with some
absolutely.
Of that funding.
Yeah, and I'm going to be talking to Samaritas, who's going to be administering that program probably next week on this show. So, I thought that was an important announcement. And look, he said, look, they make our town better.
Right, right. I mean, he's just said, very plain terms. Like, this is Wayne County is a welcoming place. And this is a boon for Wayne County. No, that was really great. Really great to hear. I mean, we've had a series of, Rick Snyder talked a lot about how important immigration was, but then pressed pause, there was all this like talk about whether we were going to attract immigrants or pressing pause. We're doing this. I think it's really nice and refreshing to hear someone saying that, openly, what's really at the heart of America. We're a nation of immigrants, and really nice to hear a leader standing up in a big crowd and saying it.
All right. Well, very good. Nancy Kaffer, of course, the editorial board of the Detroit Free Press, joining us. We will check back in with you tomorrow. We'll recap, of course, Mayor Duggan's speech. I think that'll be good. Tell the folks behind you. I see Rick Pluta and Zoe Clark in the mirror, at least. I said hello. It's been
a long time,
and I miss you guys. I'll be up there in the spring. That is going to be on Deadline Detroit in just a little bit. So thank you to everybody, and we'll talk soon.
Bye.
Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com, the one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to deadlinedetroit.com/membership. And thanks for being here today. Really do appreciate it. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we were treated to a rare thing last night. The Detroit Lions actually on Monday Night Football. Now, granted, they did not perform very well yesterday. But is there a glimmer of hope on the horizon, or are we destined to just another same old Lions type season? I, for one, think we're seeing some things that we might be able to build on, but I have been fooled before. And like the Who said, won't be fooled again, but this team seems to fool us just about every year. But joining me now to talk about these things, as he does after every Lions game, is my good friend Pat Batchelor. He is the morning anchor at WDET, that's FM 101.9, Detroit Public Radio. Pat, welcome. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Always good to be here.
Well, I got to tell you, the Detroit Lions in the first 2 weeks have put together one really good football game of football. Unfortunately, That's not two full games. So they've lost both games. They looked great in the first half against the Packers last night. We're playing very efficient football. The defense was struggling a little bit, but the second half, the wheels came off. Aaron Rodgers seemed to figure out what the defensive weaknesses were were for the Lions, which is pretty much the defense, and picked it apart in the second half. Had no trouble moving the ball down the field. Here's the weird thing. I'm not angry with the Lions. This is not the same old Lions kind of thing. Clearly, they are in the midst of a rebuild, and with the defense that they have right now, it's fortunate that they've been stocking up on draft picks because they need some talent.
Yeah, they do. And if you'd told me before last night's game that the Packers were going to win 35-17, I'd have said, yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah,
I'll take
okay, that. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what's going to happen. Yeah, there are no surprises here. I mean, you know, we knew that this was going to be a rough year because that defense is pretty thin. They're relying heavily on rookies and young players, especially in the secondary. And it showed in the second half against an all-world quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he had a bad first game in New Orleans, but, you know, you knew he was going to turn it around, and he did. But you're right. I mean, the Lions looked really, really good in the first half of that game. They moved the ball fairly efficiently. They used up a lot of time. The defense was able to contain Rodgers and the Packers offense for a half. And I love those all-white uniforms. Those were pretty sweet. I like that.
They were cool. I liked them too. I mean, I've always liked the white shirts with the silver pants. The blue ones don't work for me, but that, you know, regardless, uniforms do not make teams win or lose games, but they were kind of cool looking, I would say. You know, and I think the weather didn't help in the second half either. You know, it was getting pretty nasty out there. I'm surprised they didn't actually suspend part of that game for lightning. I was looking at the weather system that was coming through Green Bay. The freeways in downtown Green Bay were completely flooded. You know, and the people in the stands, though, they stayed put and they were just there watching the whole thing, as Lambeau fans are wont to do. We have never done well in that stadium. And so, I mean, I didn't predict them to win this game. I predict them to lose the first three games, as a matter of fact, because next week against Baltimore is not going to be anything that we're going to be enjoying watching, I have a feeling. But, you know, you look at them, Jared Goff, you know, had a rough second half, obviously threw an interception, had a couple of fumbles in that game. I mean, that's been the knock on him, is that he turns the ball over too often. Did you see anything that was just his problem, or was it just a bad circumstances and the fact that he was under a lot more pressure in the second half?
Well, to be honest, because of my schedule, I couldn't stay.
You couldn't stay up to watch the second half. That's right. I forgot. Pat does get up at 3 a.m. every day. So,
but you know, I mean, from what I have read, though, I mean, it just sounds like he had trouble with the adjustments that Green Bay made in the second half. And you know, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of options as far as receivers. You know, Quintez Cephas is pretty good. TJ Hockenson's one of the best tight ends in the game. But, you know, he's still kind of feeling his way with this offense. And, you know, it's probably going to be that way while he's here. And, you know, we'll just see how it goes, whether he can recapture what helped him get the Rams to the Super Bowl a few years ago, you know, in terms of his play. You know, it is what it is. I mean, Goff is here temporarily. I think that seems to be the consensus, unless he starts playing better. If he, you know, I mean, he's holding the job for whomever they draft or sign next year or the year after, pretty much. But hopefully, as the season wears on, they can put together a few complete games with Goff leading the way. He certainly can run. We saw that last night.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't think that's what they want him doing.
No.
But, you know, look,
but he can.
I think this team is capable of winning some games this year. You know, I don't get the feeling that this is like the 0-16 team where they were just overmatched in every phase of the game for the entire game that whole season. You know, and that was just, you know, one of those all-time horrible teams. I think this team, as they get some more experience, is going to win a couple of games this year. They might take out the Bears or the Vikings or something like that at some point. A couple other games they could win in the division. They're not going to the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Exactly. I mean, we know this about this team. They're not going anywhere. I guess the question is, why will I keep spending my Sunday watching this team for the rest of the year? What should I be looking for at this point?
At this point, you just have to look for signs of progress. See if any of the young players on defense begin to show improved play as
they
the
need
year goes
to.
On. Look for consistency from Jared Goff. Look for consistency in the running game. Look and see how Penei Sewell handles the left tackle position and whether he's able to grow into that and actually keep that job. Look at the game management of Dan Campbell and his assistants. For the first half, everything was firing on all cylinders. I mean, we saw what could happen, what can happen if they don't make any mistakes and can play like that for an entire four quarters. So I would just look for signs of progress on both sides of the ball and just see if they're playing better as toward the end of the year, like the Tigers. I mean, they started awful. And they've been playing good baseball ever since, and they're beating playoff teams in September.
These are teams that need these games too. It's nice to see that happening. I mean,
yeah.
I think the Lions might be able to play spoiler for somebody down the road. They should improve, but I mean, their secondary is so thin right now, Pat. They've already lost, they lost Okuda for the season. A number three draft pick out of Ohio State that they were hoping was going to, and he had a good camp. Apparently they were hoping he was going to go into the job, but then they lose another one yesterday. Who's also a young guy. They got practice squad guys out there right now. That's against a guy like Aaron Rodgers. That's just not going to hold. He's going to find a way to do it. And the linebackers also look just overmatched out there right now. They're also quite young. I think with these draft picks that they have stocked going forward, the defense needs to be a priority because they just don't have enough talent back there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're going to have a high draft pick in the first round next year. If you find a quarterback there who is, who is going to be a stud, find another guy like Matthew Stafford, who is, doing well now in LA, then go for it. Otherwise, build the defense. You've got Goff signed for 2 years, so there's no rush to get a quarterback unless, like I said, you find the guy, the one quarterback who's just can't miss.
I don't see that guy in college football so far this year.
No, I don't either. Absolutely. Just use as much draft capital as you can to build the defense.
And defense keeps you in games. And it seems like with the Lions offense that they have with a guy, if you're asking Goff to just be a game manager, he could be like Trent Dilfer in Tampa Bay, right? The guy won a Super Bowl. They weren't asking him to do anything other than hand the ball off and throw some short passes and occasionally take the deep throw. But he didn't have to be great because that defense that they had back in the year that they won the Super Bowl was just exceptional. That seems to be a path to success that we should use here. And now, like I said, and Goff can be that game manager. If you're not asking him to be Matt Stafford, because he didn't need to do that when he took the Rams to the Super Bowl. He was a game manager quarterback. He was not slinging it all over the field. You need him to have the high percentage passes and just complete them, keep the chains moving, and then your defense will, get the other team off the field.
Keep the chains moving, keep the clock running, keep the defense off the field for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, exactly. Because, look, here's what I smell for this year. A whole lot of games where the Lions lose, say, 30-24. That's just what it's going to be this year because the defense is going to be giving up 30 points a game. I don't see any way around it. And if the first two games are any indication, we're right on point here.
Yeah, so far. And again, bearing in mind that I don't think many people expected them to win either of these first two games, and they did not. I think I'm still looking at maybe 4 or 5 wins on the high end, 5, maybe as few as 3. It just depends on it depends on injuries too. If they lose a key player, one of their productive players, things could get even uglier than they already are. But as I said, I mean, anybody who's upset about this, just needs to understand the situation. This team is bad. They're starting from scratch a rebuilding program that's probably going to take more than a couple of years. But if we see progress, if we see that the process is gradually working, trust the process, as they say, if that process shows that it's worth trusting, then in a couple of years, maybe we can raise our expectations.
Yeah, well, again, here's one thing that I won't mind. Seeing Aaron Rodgers get traded to another team at the end of this season, I have been watching him destroy the Lions for, 13 years now? And then I have to watch him on the commercials in between as well. Like, he's on, every damn commercial during the game. Getting a little tired of it, good riddance, Aaron. Great player. Don't want to diminish how good he is, because, like I said, it took him about a half to figure it out. But once he did, there was just no missing. He just he was phenomenal.
You don't want to take that Rodgers rate?
Oh, God. Everybody gets the same great rate, Pat. All right. So, okay. The Lions are the Lions. And we're looking for progress and just going to see if we have, glimpses of progress throughout the season. I think we can raise our expectations a little bit on the college football side, especially with the two major programs. Oh, and by the way, my Western Michigan Broncos. Michigan State and Michigan both look like they are much improved over last year. Michigan State beating up on Miami the other day, and that game wasn't even really close. Let's start with Coach Tucker and what he's got going on in East Lansing, because I think when Michigan and Michigan State face off, I think Michigan State's going to be undefeated. I'm not sure about Michigan. They got a couple of tough games before they get there, but I think Michigan State's got a chance to be undefeated going into that game.
Yeah, I agree. Everyone's bought into what Coach Tucker is selling there at Michigan State, the players, the other coaches, and what he's done is phenomenal. I mean, he came in late in the process last year when Mark Antonio suddenly retired. He didn't have a lot of time to do anything, as far as shaping the team that he wanted. He went out and did some recruiting, not just of high school players, but of transfers. I mean, a lot of people transferred into Michigan State's program, the kind of players that Mel Tucker likes to have, tough, physical, it showed. I mean, it's a reflection. This team is a reflection of who Mel Tucker is. I mean, he's a tough-minded coach. He's got a Heisman Trophy caliber running back in Kenneth Walker. I'm not sure if Walker wins it this year, but if he sticks around a couple of years, he might. He's that good. I mean, that's really the thing that has energized the Spartans, is having a dynamic running back, something they haven't had in recent years. Now, I should say that while beating a ranked team on the road certainly is impressive, I think it's fair to say Miami is not as good as anybody thought they would be.
No, no.
They got blown out by by Alabama. They barely beat Appalachian State, they got drubbed by a good team at home. You look at Michigan State's schedule. They've been pretty impressive. But Northwestern, another game they won. The Wildcats don't look like they're going to win too many games this year. Youngstown
No.
State is an FCS program. I would say that their schedule, I would say it's probably comparable to what Michigan's schedule has been. Although, if you look at the ESPN rankings, MSU's strength of schedule so far, including the teams they've played and the results of the last 3 weeks, is higher than Michigan's. It's like they're in the mid-50s. Michigan's around 90. You look at the remaining schedules for both teams, Michigan's got a brutal gauntlet to go through, starting with Rutgers this weekend, a team that they barely beat in multiple overtimes last season. Of course, Rutgers wasn't that good either, but they're pretty good this year too.
They're hugely improved. I mean, Rutgers used to just be a doormat for everybody, including the FBS schools, but they've been, Greg Schiano's got them playing some pretty good football there in Jersey.
Yeah, the Big Ten East looks like one of the toughest divisions in college football. I mean, you've got, you know, even though Indiana has struggled this year and have not lived up to the lofty expectations they set last year, I wouldn't sleep on the Hoosiers yet. Maryland has the potential to put a lot of points on the board, you know, and of course all the other teams. Rutgers, you know, they're playing pretty tough. I mean, it's not going to be an easy schedule for any of the teams in that division, except possibly Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State looked great against Auburn the other night. I mean, that was a pretty competitive game and an interesting game. I found this out. This was the first time that an SEC school had traveled north to play a Big Ten team in 90 years. The Big Ten and the SEC just never want to play each other unless it's in a neutral site. And I would like to see that change personally. I think it's good for the game if you get the conferences playing each other. But yeah, Penn State again, beating Auburn was a big win for them. They beat Wisconsin. They look like they're going to be tough over there. Ohio State's got some things to work out, but they'll be around. By the time Michigan comes around to Ohio State, they're going to have figured out some of their problems. But let's talk about the Wolverines for just a minute, because we have to shorten this a little bit today.
Sure.
Tell you what, a punishing run game that they have. They threw a few passes this week against Northern Illinois just to, you know, hey, look, what a better time to do it than against a Northern Illinois team that was just completely outgunned. But that's the kind of victory we haven't seen Michigan have in a long time, beating somebody up, especially a team like Northern Illinois, which you're supposed to beat, but beating them 66-10 or whatever it was. That's the kind of thing that I used to see with the Bo Schembechler teams when I was a kid. My dad would take me to the early season games that weren't the big value tickets. So I'd see him beat up on Navy like 70-14 back then. I like watching it. And you know what? As long as the other team can't stop them from running the ball, they should keep running the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they drew up a good game plan for Cade McNamara, you know, a lot of high efficiency passes. Cornelius Johnson looks like he could be a pretty good go-to guy downfield. If the tight ends like Eric All can hold on to the ball, like All did against Northern Illinois. Yeah, and of course, that offensive line. I mean, these guys are just mashing everybody that gets in their way. We'll see if that continues against bigger physical teams like Wisconsin and Penn State and Michigan State and Ohio State, of course. You know, we saw more of Donovan Edwards, the freshman running back, and freshman quarterback J.J. McCarthy, the future of Michigan. You know, they've got Thunder and Lightning. Yeah. We're old enough to remember when Thunder and Lightning were John Long and I'm forgetting now, Terry Tyler.
Oh yeah, that's right.
UD.
I forgot.
Yeah, UD basketball.
You're talking basketball,
you know,
here.
And Lightning. Yeah, but you know, Blake Corum is Lightning, and Hassan Haskins is Thunder. I mean, yeah, I agree. As long as they can keep running the ball like that on teams, they should, you know, they should keep doing it until someone stops them. The problem is, when somebody stops them, Cade McNamara's got to show that he can complete passes in high leverage situations like third and long, or you know, second and 10, thereabouts. He's got to throw that he can throw it downfield with some velocity. One thing it seems like to me, and maybe I'm not catching it, a lot of times when he throws sideline passes, it doesn't go anywhere. The defender is right there. I don't think he has enough velocity on the ball, whereas that's J.J. McCarthy's strength. I mean, he just, you know, he just has a missile,
yeah,
for an arm, and he just lacks the experience. We might see them open things up a little bit against Rutgers this weekend, because we just learned this morning that one of their starting players, Max Melton, who's a pretty top-notch defensive back, has been suspended along with one of the reserve player, apparently for an incident involving a paintball gun.
Oh,
I don't know the details of that, but, you know.
Sounds like a bad decision made by a young person.
Yes, which sometimes happens. But Max Milton isn't going to be in the secondary, so maybe Michigan can exploit that this weekend. But I think we're not going to know how good they really are until they go to Madison, which plays Notre Dame this weekend. And I actually like the Badgers in that game. I haven't been impressed with Notre Dame this year.
At Soldier Field, too, which is really interesting to me, that's a neutral site game. I'm not sure why they would need to do that. But, good for I guess, the TV ratings and the people in Chicago who get to watch that. And again, pretty close for both schools to have a big fan base there. I wouldn't be shocked if it was pretty evenly split there. And the Badgers travel well, so that should be a fun one to watch, I think, for sure. You know, though, look, Michigan had 373 yards rushing this week. They've had over 300 yards all three games so far. And again, the competition has not been great, but I think they're still capable of putting up 250 on just about anybody in the Big Ten right now, because I haven't seen any defenses that are that stout so far, with the exception of Michigan and Michigan State. I mean, but other teams, you know, they've got weaknesses there that can be exploited. Ohio State has certainly shown that their defense is not what it has been in recent years.
Yeah, and it might not be as the season draws on. I mean, it I would expect it to be tougher because it is Ohio State. The key to beating them, of course, would be to try to contain that offense. When you look at Michigan's running backs, Ohio State's loaded in that area too. With Travion Henderson and Master Teague the third. I mean, offensively, I think they match up fairly evenly, except that Ohio State has Chris Olave, who didn't, I don't know if he played against Tulsa. I didn't see him in the stat line. So either they had him covered the whole game or he didn't play because maybe they thought, why risk him against Tulsa? But Olave is one of the best receivers on the planet. I would hope, based on what we've seen so far, that Michigan won't get blown out by Ohio State again. But I haven't seen anything yet that convinces me that Michigan's got a real chance of winning that game. We'll see. Maybe a month from now it'll be different. But that November schedule for Michigan is just absolutely brutal.
It is indeed. But I'll tell you what, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Cade McNamara get us to a 4-0, 5-0 record. Then we start seeing some split time, because every snap that McCarthy gets right now in garbage time is incredibly valuable point where you're like, you know what, we can bring this guy in if we need a change at QB in one of these big games, and he'll be ready to go. I'd like to see that happen. I think he's got the better arm. I just think that there's an unlimited ceiling with this kid.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the quarterback position for Michigan right now is as solid as it's been since Jim Harbaugh's been there. These are guys that came into his program, Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy. And they both shown strengths and maybe a few weaknesses here and there. But I think, it feels like Harbaugh is more confident in his quarterbacks now than he's been since maybe Jake Rudock.
Which is interesting because he's not letting him throw the ball. So we'll see if he changes that. I think they had probably 19 pass attempts in the game on Saturday. I would like to see him mix it up a little bit more than that. But again, until they stop you, just keep running it down their throats. And nobody's been able to do it yet. So we'll see if Rutgers has a game plan here. Should be interesting to watch. All right, Pat, we gotta let you go. Appreciate your time once again. We will talk next week. And hopefully we will still have a couple of undefeated college teams. Oh, by the way, I would be remiss if I did not mention again that the Western Michigan Broncos went into Pittsburgh, into Heinz Field, and beat the Pitt Panthers. I don't care if Pitt's a great team or not, anytime a MAC team goes into a power conference and wins a game, it's a big freaking deal on the road.
And so, you know,
Caleb Ellaby, watch out. This guy's going to be a pro prospect. He's only a sophomore. And I think if he gets another season in Kalamazoo, there are going to be scouts lining up to see this guy because he's got some potential.
I agree.
So watch the Broncos, everybody. They're a fun team. And just about every game in the world is actually on television now. So you can find them all. Central Michigan, by the way, had a tough matchup this week.
Yeah. LSU, I mean, you know, they won a national championship a couple of years ago. They're not quite up to that level these days, but they're still pretty good. And that stadium is a brutal place to play for any road team.
Look, you know, a couple of million bucks or whatever they got for playing that game is going to soothe a lot of ills.
And 49-21 is, you know, it's lopsided, but it's also kind of respectable.
Of course it is. Look, you put 21 points on LSU as a MAC team. Not a bad thing. Like I said, a lot of pros come out of the MAC. So, you know, pay attention, everybody. All right, we're going to let it go. Pat Batchelor, as always, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. All right, Pat Batchelor again, the morning anchor at WDET, Detroit Public Radio. That's FM 101.9. Give him a listen. Morning edition, great show each and every day. I still listen to public radio all the time, so you should check it out as well. And don't forget, it is that time of year for you to be making your contributions to Detroit Public Radio. You know how to do it. I'm not going to give you instructions now, but it's just something you should do to make sure that this wonderful resource in our community stays healthy and strong. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. I really do appreciate all of your support. Don't forget, if you like this podcast, it's important that you share it, that you rate this podcast, and that, of course, you subscribe to this podcast. It all helps. And the more sponsors we get, the more interviews we can do, the more shows I can put together. And I certainly do want to make sure that you are enjoying what you're listening to. So if you have suggestions, you can reach out to me. TheCraigFolleyShow@gmail.com. Again, that's TheCraigFolleyShow@gmail.com. You can get through to me that way. It's very, very easy to do. And you can find me on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Snapchat, just about anywhere. In the meantime, I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.